Get my legal staff together and see what grounds we have for fighting them. And call a teleconference of the heads of each of the Big Seven.
That'll take some time, Bert said. They're all busy people.
We don't have time. Get them together on the phone. Open links. We won't need scrambling or secure lines. Just do it now. We've only got a few hours.
Both men nodded in unison.
Right, boss.
By the time Dan entered his office, his one human secretary rushed to him, a stricken look on her fashion model's sculpted features.
Thank God you got here, she gasped. We have just received notice that a GEC legal team is on its way from Paris with a warrant for your arrest.
Dan breezed past her and into his private office. She hurried behind him. What charge? He asked as he went to the minibar.
Kidnapping?
Dan huffed as, kneeling, he opened the minibar and pulled out a bottle of Jack Daniel's Green Label. Is that all? I thought they'd try to stick me with mass murder and kiddie rape at the very least. The secretary did not crack a smile.
Dan, kidnapping falls under the World Court's Terrorism Acts. If they convict you, you could be executed.
Yeah, he said, pouring a healthy slug of the sour mash whiskey into a tumbler made of lunar crystal. That would save us all a lot of trouble, wouldn't it? His secretary had been with him for 4 years, a new record for a man who had a reputation for bedding his hired help and then getting rid of them. Her name was Tamara Duchamp, and she had been a fashion model in Paris, where her smoldering Ethiopian beauty and flowing dark hair had set photographers and magazine editors into near frenzy. But she had been intelligent enough to see that modeling was a dead end to all but the very few who allied themselves sexually to the high and powerful. A woman of thoroughly independent mind, she left the fashion industry altogether and entered the world of business. Within a year, she was Dan Randolph's office manager and irreplaceable assistant. Her title was secretary, but she knew that the title meant little. Her boss knew it too, which was more important. She was aware of Dan Randolph's reputation. She evaded his early efforts, even though they seemed rather gallant to her. To her surprise, Randolph respected her caution. Everyone else in the office told her that once he had slept with her, she would be transferred far away. They took bets on when the inevitable would happen. Now, 4 years later, all bets were off.
Dan, she said in her exotically flavored British English, this is not something that you can talk your way out of. I have checked with the legal department, and they are totally off the wall. They do not know what to do.
He plunked himself in his comfortable desk chair, took a sip of the whiskey, and leaned back far enough to put his feet on the desk. He still wore the sandals he had taken to Tete Yeroa.
Tamara, honey, never ask a lawyer what you should do. They don't know. Their brains are so stuffed with crap that they can't find their way across the street without a court order. You tell a lawyer what you want him to do, or her, he added, his face hardening.
Kate Williams has betrayed you,
Tamara said, looking angry at the thought.
And I never laid a glove on her, Dan mused. Maybe if I had been more persistent, she wouldn't have done this to me. Hell hath no fury, you know.
Tamara shook her head.
She would have cut your testicles off, one way or the other.
Pleasant thought. Suddenly exasperated, Tamara nearly shouted at him.
So what are you going to do? You cannot just sit there drinking. There is a squad of GEC people on its way here to put you in jail.
With his free hand, Dan pointed past her shoulder. Here comes my kidnapping victim. Jane walked cautiously into the office, like a woman on a tightrope. The two security men hovered beyond the door in the outer office. Before Jane could say a word, Dan told his secretary, Tamara, please arrange transportation for President Scanwell back to Paris, or wherever else she wants to go. Jane looked the younger woman up and down as she made her way past Tamara and sank gratefully into one of the clear plastic, foam-cushioned chairs in front of Dan's desk. On Earth, the chair would have been too fragile to bear an adult's weight. On the moon, it bent only slightly as Jane sat on it.
Did I hear correctly?
Jane asked, her voice calm, subdued.
You're about to be arrested?
Dan nodded. For kidnapping you.
That falls under the terrorism laws, Tamara added. This is very serious, said Jane.
Dan grinned crookedly. Will you testify on my behalf at my trial, assuming that Malik allows me to have a trial?
Of course you'll have a trial.
With a shrug, Dan said, I could always have a fatal accident while I'm in custody.
Nonsense.
So, assuming I come to trial, will you testify on my behalf? Or against me?
You did take me here against my wishes, she said, with no hint of a smile.
Yeah, I suppose I did. Tamara looked from Dan to Jane and back to her boss again.
You cannot just sit here. You must do something.
What do you suggest? Dan asked mildly.
I don't know.
Well, I do, he said, getting up from his chair. I'm going to my quarters and get some sleep.
What?
When the GEC goon squad arrives at the spaceport, wake me up. 10 to 1, Kate Williams will be with them.
Is that all you are going to do?
Tamara seemed on the verge of tears. Dan nodded. And arrange transport for President Scanwell. He came around the desk, bent over Jane, and gave her a peck on the cheek, then waved to Tamara and left the two women in his office. Once in his quarters, though, Dan did not immediately go to sleep. First, he went to his bedside phone. The display screen glowed a cheery yellow and showed in bright blue letters, Happy Birthday. Welcome to the Big 5-0. Cripes, Dan said to himself. Today's my birthday. Tamara must have remembered. He shook his head ruefully. It's going to be some party. He spent several hours speaking to his managers in their offices all over Earth and in several orbital facilities. In between calls, he chivied Bert Peel about getting all the space industrialists together for a teleconference. I'm working on it, boss, Bert exclaimed, beads of perspiration on his upper lip. I've got about half of them lined up, but every time I call another one, he or she wants a different time, and I've got to recontact all the others.
You tell them this is an emergency?
Yes, sure.
Okay, keep at it. I've only got a few hours at most.
Bert mumbled what might have been profanity and cut the connection. Dan actually managed to sleep for about 20 minutes. He dreamed he was struggling with someone, a faceless man, or maybe it was a woman. They were on the edge of the roof of some enormous skyscraper back on Earth. They fell off, and suddenly Dan was completely alone, plummeting toward the hard pavement of the street far below. He sat bolt upright in his darkened bedroom, cold with sweat, still in the coveralls he had not bothered to take off when he had flopped on the bed. Casting a quick glance at the digital time displayed on the bedside screen, he peeled off the coveralls as he made his way into the bathroom, showered, shaved, and put on a clean outfit. Another set of forest green coveralls, but these were new enough so that their color was still vivid. And he left his sandals by the bed. Lunar soft boots were much more practical. Then he stalked back to his office and went in through his private entrance, avoiding Tamara and anyone else who might be in the outer office. The dumb birthday greeting was on his desktop screen, too. Dan scowled at it as he slumped into his desk chair and flicked on the window wall. It was tuned to an outside camera view of the broad crater-pitted floor of Alphonsus. Factories dotted the plain out to the horizon, with wide spreads of solar energy farms glittering in the sunlight. A few tractors were chugging across the dusty landscape. He told the voice-activated phone to find Peel. Almost instantly, his aide's face appeared on Dan's desktop display screen.
Got 'em all, boss, Peel said without preamble. Except Yamagata. His people say he's out of contact on a field trip somewhere.
Out of contact my ass, Dan said to himself. Nobo doesn't want to talk to me. Guess we'll have to settle for number 2, then, he told Peel.
Right. In that case, we can get started in about 10 minutes.
Good. Tamara opened the door from the outer office.
The GEC team will be landing in half an hour, she announced, looking angry and afraid at the same time. And you were right. Kate Williams is in charge of the team.
Has President Scanwell left? He asked.
Not yet. She decided to wait until the GEC people arrived, and then go back with them. She's waiting out here.
Dan smiled weakly. She wants to be here for the kill, does she? Okay. Ask her to come in. She might as well see the show. Tamara ushered Jane into his office. She was still in the same beige slacks and tan jacket. Dan gestured her to a chair as he slid his computer keyboard from its niche in his desk. He spent the next few minutes huddled over his computer display screen while Jane sat silently watching him.
then peel